Disabled people should have their voices heard, and we should be able to tell our own stories.
There's the film you envision going to make when you first conceptualize it. There's the film you actually shoot, and there's the film you find in the editing room, and they're three different films.
Hey friends, welcome back to Think Inclusive, real conversations about building schools where every learner belongs. I'm your host, Tim Villegas. Today's episode is about storytelling, mentorship, and the power of showing up as your full self. I'm joined by Samuel Habib and his dad, Dan. They are co-directors of The Ride Ahead, a documentary that follows Samuel's journey into adulthood as a disabled person. Samuel is a college student. You might know him from being featured in one of his dad's films, including Samuel. When that film came out, it was 2007, and I was just starting my journey of understanding what inclusive practices really were for learners with extensive support needs. Dan is a longtime filmmaker, an advocate, and I'd like to call him a good friend. This film they've created, well, it is something truly remarkable. We'll talk about the making of the film, the misadventures of traveling with the power wheelchair, and what it means to be seen, not just on screen, but in real life. Before we meet our guests, I want to tell you about our sponsor. This season of Think Inclusive is brought to you by IXL. IXL is a fantastic all-in-one platform designed for K-12 education. It helps boost student achievement, empowers teachers, and tracks progress seamlessly. Imagine having a tool that simplifies what usually requires dozens of different resources. Well, that's IXL. As students practice, IXL adapts to their individual needs, ensuring they're both supported and challenged. Plus, each learner receives a personalized learning plan to effectively address any knowledge gaps. Learn more at IXL.com/inclusive. That's IXL.com/inclusive. All right, after a short break, it'll be time to think inclusive with Samuel and Dan Habib. We'll catch you on the other side.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Samuel and Dan Habib, welcome to the Think Inclusive podcast.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having us.
Samuel, would you like to introduce yourself to our audience of educators?
Hi, Tim. My name is Samuel Habib. I am the co-director of The Ride Ahead. I work part-time at the Westchester Institute for Human Development and like Right Now Films. It's awesome to be on your show.
Well, I'm so happy to have you on. And, you know, Samuel, from following, you know, your dad's films and videos online, and Dan, you and I have had lots of conversations over the years. I feel like I've watched you grow up. So this is really cool. Why was it important for you to tell your story in a documentary? Like, why did you make The Ride Ahead?
Disabled people should have their voices heard, and we should be able to tell our own stories. I don't like that movies and stories about disabled people are often about curing, or saving, or even killing the person because they have a disability. Or you will see someone with a disability have an average talent at something and people will be, quote, inspired, and respond to the talent in a way they might not to someone that doesn't have a disability. We created this documentary and our impact campaign so that young adults with disabilities will feel more seen and heard, and find their own mentors. As someone who struggles to communicate, this film is incredibly meaningful to me because it is making my experience visible and it is getting my voice, and others' voices, heard. I can't wait to see how it changes the landscape. I think it's going to help improve the world for disabled people. I learned from my mentors that it's not easy to be an adult with a disability. Connecting with the disability community has helped me feel much more confident in myself.
Absolutely. And I would just like to say thank you for making this film. And your voice is absolutely central to this film. And the iterations that I've seen, I'm trying to remember when this all started. When did this? It was a few years ago now.
Sure, I can fill that in. And Tim, again, I want to echo, thanks for having us. It's great to continue our long partnership and friendship with you. So Sam and I have been co-directing this project since, late 2019. We came up with this idea. And it was Samuel's idea. You know, he really wanted to tell his own story of transition into adulthood while interviewing mentors from around the country. It started out with the short film, My Disability Roadmap, which was in the New York Times in 2022. And we were thrilled to then win an Emmy Award for that film. It just took off well, way beyond our wildest dreams. But all along, we had planned to make a feature-length film. And so we just kept working the next 2 years to create The Ride Ahead. So it's really a two-felt project. And now we have tons of educational materials available. And it's a lot going on. So it's been a really awesome project for us to work on together. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that.
Yeah. Samuel, can you share a story about the filming process?
Well, we had a lot of challenges, Samuel, right? A lot of interesting things go down during the filming.
Setting up and getting all of the interviews done was the most challenging part of creating the film. We had a lot of misadventures during our travels. On our flight to Indianapolis to interview Andrew Peterson, they turned my power wheelchair on its side both ways. And it got damaged both ways. On our New York City trip to interview Keith Jones and Maysoon Zaheed, I had a seizure. But we still got the filming done on all the trips.
And some people will see in the film that the actual adventure of traveling when you have a person with complex disabilities and health issues, a 350-pound wheelchair, a lot of equipment, ableism at every encounter, not every encounter, but in many encounters, all the hijinks that come with transportation and airplanes, that became part of the storytelling of the film, because I think that, and that has really resonated with a lot of people, especially wheelchair users who have been through this way too many times, the adventures and misadventures that can happen during travel. Phil has somebody there. Mother? Oh, yeah. All right, I'll try to make this story brief at PG-13 for your audience.
Thank you.
We were in one of our travels in Indianapolis. We had to pick something up from a pharmacy. And long story short, they pointed us to a counter that looked like we were skipping the line, even though we were not intending to skip the line. And some guy just turned to Samuel and just said, "Mother!" You could guess the rest. And just started yelling at him for skipping the line. And we just got out of that pharmacy quickly. And then when we got home and told Betsy wanted to know about our trip, the first thing Samuel said to her was, "Mother!" We had to untangle what the
heck was. It's like, okay, yeah.
Story that
what do you mean by that, Sam?
Yeah, we had some stories to tell for sure.
Oh, that's really interesting. There's so many interesting kind of subplots or arcs in the film, and I'm trying to remember, you know, because I have seen it, the film grow over the last few years. In preparation for this interview and watching the complete, you know, from beginning to end, I did notice it was I think it was the scene where you were rock climbing that was added, but it was added before you getting into the van, I think, with your brother. And I just was like, oh, that it just gave a little bit more context to what was happening in, you know, the activities that you were involved with. And I just loved I've loved to see how this film has grown, including all of those little stories, like you know, you talking to that really rude person in the airport, the troubles with your equipment, you know, falling and breaking and you know, having to deal with airlines and stuff like that. It was so authentic and real. And so I just wanted to commend you all for that.
Yeah. Thanks, Tim. I should just say one thing about that is film, I think, is perhaps the most collaborative art form because, you know, sure, Sam and I are on the forefront and doing interviews like this, but we had an incredible team of people animating the film, doing a music composition, editing the film for a year and adding scenes like that and taking them out, right? And figuring that out. And we were intentional about hiring a majority disabled film crew for our production and outreach. And that was a really important thing to make sure that we hired disabled people to do the work. So anyway, the whole process of making the film also was just so fun, even beyond the filming, just producing it and putting it together.
Yeah. Okay, Sam, I've got a question about the topics of the film because they get a little awkward sometimes. And I know when I was a young man, I would not want to talk about dating and sex when my dad was right there. So was it awkward digging into these personal issues for the film with your dad being so heavily involved with the project?
It has not been awkward at all. My life is very intertwined with my parents, so they are very aware of most of my deeply personal things. But some of the medical stuff was difficult to share. I've had trauma from a lot of blood work and IVs from when I was a baby. It's difficult to get my blood drawn. I get nervous when I have to go into the ER. So it doesn't feel good to talk about that. But I also wanted to show my strength, that I've gotten through some very tough things in my life. Same for a lot of other people with disabilities.
You know, and actually, Jim Lebrecht, who most people I'm sure in the audience know, what the creator of Crip Camp, one of the creators, he's our executive producer, and he watched a cut of the film and he asked Samuel, are you comfortable sharing these really personal, difficult medical moments with such a wide audience? And Samuel said what he just said today, like, I'm tough. I want to show it. This is real. This is what a lot of people with disabilities have to navigate. And if you don't show that, you're not telling the truth. And, you know, in terms of the point about, was it awkward with your dad? A lot of people think it must have been, but in part, I think it wasn't because this film was Samuel's story to tell. And our whole process revolved around giving Samuel the space to share his story and to ask the questions he wanted to ask of the mentors and to tell the story the way he wanted to tell it. So I think it would have been a lot more awkward if I was like writing a script for Samuel trying to guess what he wanted to say, but it wasn't that. It was really Samuel trying to express his own life in his own way. And the whole team was around you to make that possible.
Would you mind if I ask it like just a follow-up question about the process of creating the film? Because you know, Dan, you mentioned, you know, you didn't write a script, right? So, and this may only be interesting to me. Hopefully it's interesting to other people, but in creating a documentary, is there like, The main point is we're telling Samuel's story. We're telling your story, Samuel. But did you have an idea of where you wanted to go? Or did you just start taking as much tape as possible and then kind of seeing where the story led?
Right. That's it's a nuanced question. So I think I might need to address that because as we talked about, Tim, Samuel has put a lot of time and thought into dictating out answers to a lot of questions we get and having them ready in his device, but it's a little harder to in the moment kind of answer nuanced questions like that. But it's a good question. I think basically, you know, this is my 20th documentary and I've done 5 like big films. And so I've learned a few things along the way. And what I've learned is you need to let there's the film you envision going to make when you first conceptualize it. There's the film you actually shoot and there's the film you find in the editing room. And there are 3 different films. And this was, you know, our original concept was, this is a film about Samuel's journey into adulthood. And we want you to tell the story, right, Samuel? We want you to do what you wanted to do, which was learn from these incredible mentors. And we're going to make that happen by raising a lot of money, by, you know, doing all the things we need to do to get it to be possible. And then we just filmed a lot. And I don't think we knew where it was going exactly. I think we just knew that you were going to keep growing older, Samuel. You were going to keep having experiences. You were going to keep maturing. You're going to keep learning from these people, and you're going to have certain key junctures in your life, whether that was a challenging medical procedure, or whether that was going to college, which we show in the film, or whether that is, you know, going to somebody, your cousin's wedding and having a lot of mixed feelings about that, because it's something you want as well. And all these junctures, then in the editing room, you build a storyline that is both real, like it's about Samuel's evolution to adulthood, but doesn't have to all be in chronological order. So you can mix and match scenes as long as they continue to show the arc of the film, which is Samuel evolving as a person, becoming older. And then you look for that elusive ending to the film. Like, how is the film going to end? What is the penultimate moment? And once we went out to St. Louis and had this incredible experience with the GNA01 neurodevelopmental disorder community, which is the Samuel's disability, and had this moment, Samuel, where you were mentoring all these young kids after being mentored by all these others, it just felt like a very emotionally real and captivating moment. And that it became a really powerful ending, we think, for the film.
Thank you for sharing that, Dan. I really appreciate it. Samuel, how do you feel about being a person with a disability?
I'm proud to be a part of the disability community. And I enjoy having an awesome team of support people every day. The only thing I don't like about having a disability is that my genetic disorder has made it more difficult to drive my chair by myself and use my communication device. And it caused my seizure disorder.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important thing for your community, Tim, is that, Samuel, you know, you've lived with a disability your entire life. It has been your identity his entire life. And as Samuel says in the film, I would not take away my disability. I don't want to be cured. But there are some things that get in the way of me living my life, like your movements, or like now the fact that you have lost a lot of ability to drive your wheelchair and things because of your disorder. And I think that's really powerful, I think, especially for young disabled kids and their family members to see that you're proud of being disabled. You're proud of being part of the disability community. You know, that's something people need to hear, I think, to have that sense of culture and community.
I'd like to jump the... If it's okay, we can get back to the question about dealing with condescending people. But specifically with your communication device, because you talked about the technology that you use, Samuel. So using AAC, augmentative and assistive communication, can be very time-consuming and frustrating. How did you try to capture that in the film?
My communication device is so important in my life, so it's with me all the time. But it is really slow and frustrating to use a device, especially because it's gotten harder to move my arms because of my GNA01 neurodevelopmental disorder. And it is really hard for me to talk. That's why we put the scene in the film where I'm speaking out the words one by one, and my dad is repeating them. Then we show him programming them into the device. I think that shows that it takes a long time to get the words into my device. We also showed Bob slowly typing his words in his scene. We also wanted to show that I communicate better with people that are patient and who talk to me in an age-appropriate way.
And the Bob that Sam alludes to is Bob Williams, is another legend in the disability field that we had an incredible chance to get to know and meet and interview.
Yeah, the giants in the disability community that you interviewed, Samuel, is... unbelievable. So just an amazing lineup of people and community that you captured in the film. You mentioned about people speaking to you in an age appropriate way. So how is it dealing with people who are condescending? Mm-hmm. Have you adapted any particular strategies on how to deal with that?
Beyond cursing more, maybe part of it, but here we go.
I want to curse at people who talk down to me, like Jo, the woman at the airport, in the film, but I did not because I'm afraid that people would get mad at me. Next time, I will say, talk to me like I'm an adult. I am learning a lot from people with disabilities, that it's not easy to be an adult with a disability. But I'm learning from them how to be a better disability rights advocate for my life, and for other people with disabilities.
Yeah, Samuel is a very kind person, and you're kind of a conflict-averse person. You don't like to have conflict. You don't really like to have arguments. So it's hard when somebody does something that feels very condescending or rude. It's hard to just say F you, you know? Mason Lee would say that. Judy Human would say that. would probably find a funny way, and then has found funny ways to deflect that. He can. There's some great stories that he can tell. But I think, like you said, it's you're learning to be strong and react honestly and clearly without necessarily being mean or rude to people. That's not your nature. That's not what you want to do. But it's hard. You see in the film how we try so hard to let this woman know in the airport that there's a way to talk to Samuel in an age-appropriate way, and she just doesn't get it. And you don't, as family members, as advocates like Samuel, you don't want to fight that fight every day at every turn. It's exhausting. You have to pick your battles. You have to figure out when you're ready to be that advocate that day and fight that fight, or when you just want to walk away and go get a coffee and forget about it.
Samuel, do you have any tips on how on communicating with you or other people who have communication challenges?
Be patient and do not talk down to me. Ask me how I best communicate. Slow down the pace of the conversation to create more space for me to contribute. If you don't understand me, ask me to repeat what I said. If I'm typing on my device, don't start another conversation. Please wait for me to finish.
Yeah, I remember when Samuel first answered that question and typed that, and we kept answering his advice, and said, that is so on point. That's it. I think a lot of people I know who are AAC users or have communication challenges have said that really resonates with them.
Yes. I learned a lesson not too long ago about and speaking with someone who was using a communication device, and I was catching myself by like looking at the person typing and kind of in my own mind predicting what they were going to say. And it was so like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is not the right thing to do. Like, I have to step back and just allow the person to, say what they're going to say without me, trying to help them predict or, interrupt them. So I really appreciate that's really great advice.
Yeah. And I just say it took us a fairly long time as a family to get to that point. Especially my extended family, our extended family. This does not come naturally to a lot of people to create the kind of space that is needed for someone that uses a device to type or that takes a long time to speak. So even people like my wonderful parents, my mom is turned 96 today. My dad will turn 94 in a couple of weeks.
Wow.
When they were in their early 90s, they finally kind of figured it out. But it's never too late.
That's right. Never too late. Yes, exactly.
More space to communicate.
Okay, so let's talk about intimacy and dating. People with disabilities are people, so they want to have relationships. Intimacy, dating, what are some challenges that... For you, what are some of the challenges of that for you, and how do you want to navigate relationships?
People don't see me as a boyfriend or dating material, and sometimes they don't see me as old enough to have sex. And obviously, that is not true, so that can be frustrating. But even though it can be frustrating, I am still putting myself out there to meet the girl for me. I am on dating apps like Hinge, Bumble, and also Dateability and Ellie. I'm also going out to places where people my age hang out. Accessibility is definitely an obstacle when it comes to getting into people's homes for parties or certain bars. But the biggest obstacle is definitely ableism.
I'll just add from the parent perspective, and I think a lot of other maybe parents or family members can relate to this. There's so many things in Samuel's life that we've been able to actively support. Your education, your access to education, your access to... housing and a living space, to employment to some extent, like us working together, to a community and advocate for a community and a state and a country that's more accessible to people with disabilities. But we cannot wave a magic wand and make a dating life happen for you. and nobody can really do that. I think a lot of young people are struggling with this, not just people with disabilities. But it can be one of the biggest challenges of transition, I think, for people with disabilities who really want those relationships, and they can be elusive for a lot of different reasons. And it's hard. I think Samuel has expressed to us that it's one of the most challenging parts of his transition to adulthood has been the difficulty of really getting into a dating groove and everything that he wants to come with that.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best of luck with that.
Yeah. There's always somebody for everybody. You just got to find
That's right.
And I do think for a lot of reasons, people with disabilities have told me it tends to happen a little later for them. It tends to happen more in the late 20s, but that's not comfort for you. You're not that patient.
No, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure that's not what you want to hear.
Exactly.
We briefly touched on it, all the mentors that you interviewed, during the film, and they gave you lots of great advice. Mm-hmm. Is there one piece of advice that you've most taken to heart and that may benefit other young adults with disabilities?
The advice I got from Maysoon was, you are not alone. Find your community. That was powerful advice because I've always had a strong community. Starting with Beaver Meadow Elementary School and right through Concord High School, I'm continuing to find my community at my summer job at a concert venue, at work at the Westchester Institute for Human Development, in the disability justice community, and in my hometown of Concord.
That I think that's great advice for everybody. You know what I mean? But I'm so glad that has resonated with you, and hopefully that resonates with our audience as well. Mm-hmm. In a minute, I asked Samuel what he's been up to lately between college, film work, and a summer job at a concert venue. He's got a lot going on. And we'll dive into what inclusive education really looks like and how school leaders can make it happen. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education. MCIE partners with educators and school systems to promote authentic inclusion, foster change, and support the implementation of inclusive practices, whether it's district-wide transformation, customized learner planning, or professional learning and coaching. MCIE walks alongside educators every step of the way. And here's the best part. Our work begins with a conversation. So if you're ready to create schools where every learner belongs, visit mcie.org and get in touch. And let's start that conversation today. So you mentioned a couple things, and we're just right now about your employment. You said you work at a concert venue. You work at the Westchester Institute on Human Development. Did I get that right?
For Human Development.
Okay, there we go. What are you up to now?
I continue to work part-time at the Westchester Institute for Human Development doing film work and presentations. The past few years, I've been in college at NHTI, the local community college in Concord, New Hampshire, working towards my liberal arts associate's degree. This January, I started attending Southern New Hampshire University, a four-year college, with a major in history. I also have a summer job at a music venue in New Hampshire called Meadowbrook, scanning tickets. I got to see a bunch of free shows. Through my film work, school, and the job, I am hoping to continue to make new friends.
You know, my wife, Betsy, Samuel's mom, Betsy, and I joke that that's our retirement job. We hope that we can work
at this
venue and just like scan some tickets and then go see the show for free. I was with Samuel the other night supporting him. Usually his direct support professionals do it, but we didn't have anybody available. So I went, supported him for during the Zac Brown Band, which was really fun.
Gosh,
we watched a few numbers, and then Betsy and I went back and saw the whole show the night afterwards. But you've seen James Taylor and Treen and the Pixies, and you got like 20 shows lined up for this summer. So it's a good gig.
Oh my gosh. That sounds like a dream summer job right there. Yes. That's amazing. A lot of people that listen and watch are school leaders, educators. So what advice do you have for school leaders or future educators to create spaces that value and include all students?
Don't segregate. Create a sense of belonging. Have high expectations for all students. Make the entire building and extracurricular activities accessible. All of my schools have been inclusive, and that made a big impact on my education and my work now as a filmmaker.
And Tim, if I could just give you some praise. You know, I listened to your podcast series on inclusive schooling, and it was really interesting and really well done. And I think I would venture to guess that a lot of what you found in those schools reflects what Samuel just said. Don't segregate, you know, include students in all different aspects of not just the school curriculum, but extracurricular. Have high expectations. right? Presume competence. I mean, that seemed, those seem to be a lot of the themes that you found as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting. If I can go on a little bit of a tangent, Samuel, the people that I talk to that work in inclusive schools and the leadership, and they're all on board and on the same page and moving forward with inclusive practices, it's like they don't even realize how unique they are. You know, it's like whenever I've asked, like, do you understand how unique and exceptional you are, because not everyone decides to do this. And more often than not, and I've heard it in the films that you've made, Dan, is their response is, this is just who we are. This is what we do. And it's so interesting that it really is a decision to be inclusive. And the mindset being already there or working on it, that that leads to inclusive practices, yes, and then successful outcomes for students. Yes. And it seems so simple, right? Over and over and over again, that's what we find out.
Yeah. It's no, it's true. And just to kind of play off that, I was telling Samuel that we just bumped into his elementary school teacher the other day, Barbara O'Brien, who plays very prominently in our first film, including Samuel. And she's a master teacher, and she's just such a brilliant educator and inclusive educator, and has believed in that her whole career for decades. But she says, you know, it takes a lot of the newer teachers aren't being taught the skills, or it takes a while to learn the skills to do it really successfully. I don't want to minimize how challenging education is, especially in the post-COVID era. Mm-hmm. Every educator I know has said it's gotten a lot harder. It really has. So I don't want to underestimate that. Yeah, sure, it is challenging to have an incredibly diverse group of learners in your classroom. But if you have values and leadership that says, as you said, this is what we do, this is what's right for our kids, it's right for our community, then you just make it a priority to find a way to make that work. It's a non-negotiable, mm-hmm, right? You just don't segregate kids with disabilities. So I think, Sam, what you're saying, don't segregate, that's it. That's at the core of it. You don't segregate kids just because they have disabilities. And if you start with that as your premise, then it's hard work and it's complicated sometimes, but you figure out the rest of it.
Right, exactly. So this is a great film, The Ride Ahead. How can people host screenings of the film? And what are some resources available for people who want to do a screening event?
Thanks for asking about that. On our website, www.rideaheadfilm.com, we have a host a screening page. You can find information there about our education kit, which has all of the accessible versions of the film, plus extended interviews between me and my mentors. The kit also has an awesome discussion guide and a life planning tool. If you go to our resources page, you can download the discussion guide and life planning tool for free. The host a screening page also has information about our community screening campaign. Public K-12 schools and smaller nonprofits can apply for a free education kit to host a screening as part of that campaign.
And there's a couple more notes to add to what Samuel said. We just recently were able to publicly announce that the film is going to be on PBS this summer. It premieres July 21st on a program called POV. And although it's maybe on the broadcast might be a little late for some people, it's 10 p.m. on a Monday night, it's going to be streaming for free on the POV website for 2 months after that. So we're developing right now new additional educational materials, a watch party kit that people can download for free to have their watch parties. Taylor mentioned the discussion guide and the life planning tool. We're really proud of those. We worked with our advisory board of young adults with disabilities and a lot of other folks to develop that discussion guide. And it's really robust and has some very interesting, provocative questions to go along with the film. And then the life vision planning tool, planning kit, was something we worked on with the folks who started the Charting the Life course that I think a lot of your community will be familiar with. It's a life planning or person-centered planning framework. And we blended quotes and scenes from the film with that life planning framework and put together this really great PDF that people can download for free to do life planning and life vision planning with young adults with or without disabilities. So all that, you know, we're based at a nonprofit at Westchester Institute for Human Development. So we make a lot of our materials out there just for free for download. So we're really, really excited for people to start watching the film and using it in these ways.
All right. Fantastic. Yes. And we'll make sure to put all that information in the show notes. And then, even if this publishes after the free period of that the Riot ad will be on PBS, there will be other ways for you to watch the film and get access to those resources. So thank you, appreciate that. Okay. All right, we've covered a lot, but now it's one of my favorite parts of every episode, the mystery question. I asked Samuel and Dan to imagine their dream musical jam session. Who's on their fantasy lineup? Let's find out. So I wrap up every episode with a mystery question. And so the mystery question for us today is, who would you want to have a private musical jam session with? And so we can all answer this question, but Samuel, if you can go first, that'd be great.
I would love to jam with Allo Black. Love his songs, Wake Me Up and I'm the Man.
All right. I like it. Who would I jam with? I was thinking about this today, and I have to go back to, I've been a U2 fan forever, and so I would love to jam with the band U2, Bono, The Edge, Adam Clayton, and Larry Mullen Jr. They're some of my favorite musicians. So that's who I'd want to jam with. Dan, do you have any?
Oh, let's see. Sure, I can come up with somebody. I'm gonna answer as both high school age Dan and current Dan. So high school age Dan was really into Led Zeppelin and The Clash. So
okay.
Pick one. Take either Led Zeppelin or The Clash. I would jam with you one of those any day, although I think both bands are fully disbanded and probably half of them are dead, but still, if that's possible,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then current day Dan, you know, this is like not the ultimate band in the world, but my wife and I really like the band Lake Street Dive. Lake Street Dive, they're a great band. And we were going to see them. We're supposed to see them in April of 2020. And the show got canceled because of COVID. We have not seen them since. So I want to get a chance to at least go to the concert, if not jam in person with Betsy, and go to see Lake Street Dive.
Lake Street Dive. Are they a New England band? Or
no, they're actually out of the South somewhere, I think.
Okay. I've never heard of them. So yeah. It gives me something new to listen to.
I encourage people to just check out on Spotify or whatever you listen to music on. Lake Street Dive. They're really
great. All right. All right, let's do a bonus one, and this can be real quick. Have you all gone to any baseball games this season?
Yeah, where have we been so far? We've got plans for a bunch more, but we've been to a few. You want to share something about maybe what a trip that we took recently that involved a baseball game? This might be a little more than just baseball, but you can edit it as you see fit.
Yeah, that's fine.
I had an awesome trip in late April to Kansas City and Lawrence, Kansas for my film work. We had two great screenings, one at Kansas University and one in Kansas City. We also caught a Royals game and visited the Negro League Hall of Fame, which has been a big bucket list destination for me for a while now, since I've listened to a lot of books about that league. We also went to the World War I Museum and ate a lot of barbecue and burgers.
Oh, Kansas City barbecue is so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
That baseball, as you heard, between the Royals game and the wonderful Negro League Hall of Fame, there's a lot there. We went to we have a minor league team near us in Manchester, New Hampshire, the AAA, AA affiliate of the Blue Jays, the Fisher Cats. Been to a game there. Sunday, we're going to a Woo Sox game, which is in Worcester, Massachusetts, and they're the AAA affiliate of the Red Sox with Sam's older brother Isaiah and my brother Josh are going. And we bought tickets to the Dodgers-Red Sox game.
Okay.
Going to that game in Fenway
probably
Park.
Watching that one on TV. So yes. Yeah. Yes. So if you remember, I live in the Atlanta area, and my dad actually flew in from California and we went to a Saturday night game here at Truist Park to see the Dodgers and Braves. So that was a treat. It was like a birthday present for me. So that was wonderful.
Loved nice. It. Yeah. We also, actually, do you want to add a little bit more about our other trip that Tim might be interested in?
I went to spring training in Arizona with my dad and Uncle Josh the first week of March. We got to see the Dodgers, Rangers, Cubs, Padres, Giants, and Diamondbacks. It was cool to see them practicing up close, especially Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, and get some autographs. One of the cool things that happened was we bumped into NASCAR driver Kyle Larson at the Dodgers game. He was there with his kids and posed for a picture with me. And I love just looking out the window when we fly.
Yeah.
Nobody else seemed to notice him. We were just walking around. I'm like, hey, that's Kyle Larson. And Samuel, being a huge NASCAR fan, we were like, whoa.
That's super great.
Very kind to us, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that. I love that. Spring training. I've never been to any spring training games, so that is kind of a bucket list item for me.
Oh,
so,
highly recommend. I mean, just as Samuel said, watching your guys, Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, watching Freddie Freeman was just taking batting practice, just hitting home run after home run, opposite field. And then, of course, he gets up to the game, hits a home run opposite field. So it was pretty cool. We just love seeing these guys, the athleticism and the camaraderie they have up close.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, Mookie has his own podcast. I don't know if you know that. Yeah. So it's called On Base, I think. It's like a Bleacher Report podcast. And I love listening to it. He's a really good interviewer. So,
okay.
Yes. There you go. Something to listen to. You know what I mean? Samuel and Dan Habib, thank you so much for being on the Think Inclusive podcast. We really appreciate your time.
It was great to be with you today. Thanks so much for your questions and reactions to the film. We'll keep you posted on the ride ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim. Really appreciate you having us on. It means a lot to us.
That was Samuel and Dan Habib. I'm so grateful for their honesty, humor, and insight. The Ride Ahead is a spectacular film. It shows what's possible when disabled people tell their own stories. If you're an educator, here's one practical step. Ask your students how they best communicate. And then wait and give them space. I guarantee it'll be worth it. That's all the time we have for this episode of Think Inclusive. Please share this episode with someone who needs to hear it or watch it. Rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. And follow Think Inclusive wherever you get your podcasts. Now, let's roll the credits. Think Inclusive is brought to you by me, Tim Villegas. I write, edit, mix, master. I basically wear all the podcast hats. This show is a proud production of the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education, scheduling and additional production help from Jill Wagoner. Our original music is by Miles Kredich with Extra Vibes from Melody. Big thanks to our sponsor, IXL. You can check them out at IXL.com/inclusive. And hey, here's a fun fact. Dan and I met in real life in Atlanta when he screened his film Intelligent Lives. That was back in 2018 when producing this podcast full-time was just a dream. Well, Dan, dreams do come true. We seriously love hearing from you. Are you using these episodes in your college courses, sharing them with your team? Let me know at tvegas@mcie.org. I read every single message, and yes, I geek out over them and share them with people. If you have made it this far into the episode, you're officially part of the Think Inclusive Inclusion crew. Trying that one on for size. Want to help us keep the good stuff coming? Head to mcie.org and click the donate button at the top of the site and toss in a few bucks, $5, $10, $20. It helps us keep partnering with schools and districts to move inclusive practices forward and supporting educators who are doing the work. You can find us on the socials almost everywhere at Think Inclusive. Thanks for hanging out. And remember, inclusion always works.
From MCIE.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a two-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details. Yeah.